This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Mass in the final call. Rosario grounds out the Gunnar Henderson after he should have struck out to end the game. That was a swing strike, the cutter he reached. Bat was pointed towards first base. He should have been rung up. Instead, he got an extra life and then grounded out. So the Orioles, no harm, no foul when it was all said and done. But win the game, break a three-game losing streak, and with a win, you know, get their 10th victory of the season. It has been a long, arduous process to get there. This season has not started the way that a lot of Oriole fans and a lot of baseball authorities thought it would, because the Orioles were favorites to win the division in the eyes of a lot of people. And not just that orange Kool-Aid sort of drinking. I mean, they, going into 2023, I should say, only the Dodgers have won more games than the Orioles. And going back to the second half of 2022. But this year, it's been a disaster. And my main gripe has been the lack of offense. You knew the rotation was questionable. We've beaten this horse into a pile of dust right now. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, ripping it with Ryan. We'll get that started here in a few minutes. Nolan McGraw, Vinny, of course, out to do profiles of the next 10 Ravens about to be selected, barring trades. You knew the rotation was questionable, and then injuries, underperformance, has said it sucks. They have the worst starting rotation in baseball through the first 24 games of the season. The numbers bear that out. But Sagano bulldogged through an outing in which Nolan, I thought he wasn't long for the game, and he wound up making it through seven, got no assistance offensively. They did get him off the hook, and then Soto takes the L with some interesting Bucknerisms there late in that game. And then Povich, Orioles fall behind. Then they scrape two to take the lead, which held up because the bullpen was outstanding. So they last two games anyway. They've had quality starts by any definition that people want to use as a quality start. They've just been unable to score. And that's been my major problem. And Nolan McGraw, no 44 home runs from last year in Toronto now. 24 from Moomin or on the IL. But Wesper, what the hell? Gunner missed the first, week plus, so we can't, throw that out. Alley hit two of his four home runs on opening day.
Westberg might be coming out of it.
You think?
Had a really big triple the other night that should have been, game-changing for him, but they had to settle for the sac fly in the loss in game two, and then one for four last night. Did strike out twice, but I mean, there's back-to-back games with a hit, so again, it's only two games, but to me, that triple the other night, I thought that should have been like a dugout energizing moment that everyone just rallied behind and they take off from there. But like I said, you guy on third base, no outs, and you only get him home on a sac fly and that's it for the inning. I mean, that's tells you the full story right there of the uphill battle it's been for this lineup.
Now, when I say the offense sucks, am I being inappropriate with that description?
No, not at all.
I mean, weakness of the team, rotation, yes. Fundamental flaws, well documented. This is a team that was in the top 3, 4, 5, and pretty much outside of runners in scoring position, every offensive statistic that mattered in 2024. And this year, there's still enough you can do damage. But is everyone slumping at the same runner on third, nobody out. Story of the season for that series against the Nats. They were 3-for-28 with runners in scoring position. 3-for-28. They should have won two of the three games. They got their pants pulled down in the first game. But they should have won the last. Well, they did win yesterday, obviously. But that should have been a series win as opposed to, you know, chewing on your nails, hoping you can get out of there with the finale, with the Mountain picking up the save. I think, and they have, like, assistant hitting coaches, a new hitting. They got rid of Borscholte and Fuller and all of this good stuff. They still seem impatient. They don't hit well in the clutch. Do they even advance runners? How many times we see first and second and they stay on, they're like cemented to those bags. They don't even get from second to third, or at least it has been a very frustrating and almost mesmerizing thing to watch with them offensively.
Especially for the big names, you know, Adley, Henderson. You know, I mean, Henderson just, again, 0-for-3 last night. Just, it never seems like he's going to come out of this. And we're beyond the delayed spring training excuse for him at this point. I don't want to hear that anymore. You know, he's had plenty of time, plenty of games under his belt so far in 2025, where he should be off and cruising by now. You know, doesn't have to be the hot start that he was off to last year, where he hit, seemed like, a billion home runs in April or whatever it was. But give us something. You know, the only thing I can hope is they're all cold right now. They all get hot at the same time, but yeah, right. That's probably unlikely. And the more time that passes here, you're right. I'm becoming a little more apologetic with the rotation. They're kind of making do with what they have. And the offense, if they were even halfway decent, where 3-4 guys were actually hot at the same time, this might be a 500 baseball team right now.
And 2 days ago, I gave you the on-base percentages, which are bad. How about some slugging percentages? This is last night's lineup. Ced's 590. I mean, Cedric right now is the Orioles' all-star representative the way things are playing out. Rutschman, slugging percentage. This is good guys are in the 400s plus. Monsters are above 5. 364. That should be his on-base percentage. It's a slugging percentage. Gunnar Henderson, 377. Again, should be his on-base percentage. Slugging percentage. And a guy, and this is just Bob Haney, Ryan Mountcastle's starting to really agitate me right now. His slugging percentage sits at a cool 324. And this is a guy that I said was going to hit 33 home runs here in 2025. He has one. And we're talking sample sizes. I think some of these sample sizes are getting larger as opposed to short-term issues. Westberg slugging 386. That's the meat of your lineup. With good on-base percentages as slugging percentages. And their slugging and their on-base percentages are bad batting averages right now. So if I'm looking for the one thing that is concerning with the Orioles that goes back to last season, by the way, inability to put runs on the board and crooked numbers at that. They've hit one home run since Saturday when they hit 5. And that was Adley, a window dressing in a game in which you had two position players pitching for you, getting blown out by Cincinnati.
How about some love for your guy, Laureano? You wanted him in the lineup the other night against a lefty?
Man, your ears.
He was there last night.
Yeah, but it was, what, 100-plus off the bat, too? A little exit velo. Mm-hmm. And he barely got around the score. You needed the clutch hits
A halfway decent throw there. He would have been out by a mile.
Anywho, Orioles tonight taking on the Tigers. Ryan Ripken. Now we're ripping it with Ryan. And Ryan, I don't know how much you were listening driving in, but I was lamenting the Orioles offense, something that's been going on a semi-daily basis.
Hey, death taxes, and Bob's going to have some thoughts, especially because of, I know, the Mountie situation right there.
Starting
I heard
to
that.
Piss me off a little bit here.
Hey, you know what? I got some context coming up later here that we can talk about. How do you get out of your head? Because we're talking about the young guys. I got to say, when you get to the big leagues, a lot of those guys are going to tell you, that have had success. Talent, a lot of guys are talented up there. It's what's between the ears that's going to get you back on track, and there's quite a few of those guys that are trying to find
it. We have some domed-up Orioles, is what you're saying?
I think that that's one of the contexts. I got to talk to two, I think that they're legends of the game, at least for me growing up. Brian Roberts, Mark Teixeira gave me some great insights, so we can talk about that coming up if you want to, Bob.
We're ripping it with Ryan here on 105.7 The Fan. And all of baseball, Ryan, before we get to that, Malachi Starks. You follow the draft religiously, like everyone else. It's always a good Thursday night viewing extravaganza. Eating down an egg roll like we were doing in my house last night. But Starks, linked to Baltimore multiple times. Safe pick, need pick. I don't think anyone can really complain too much about it. But then again, people complain about things for whatever reason.
For all the reasons, right? It felt like it was a guy that was linked to Baltimore for a while. Could he still be there? Is he a perfect fit to be a Raven? Play like a Raven? It feels like it. And obviously, though, if we want to do a track record for safeties in the first round, there's only one that didn't work out so far. Four have been drafted in the first round. Matt Elam is that one.
That was a rough one.
And last pick, I believe, of the first round right after the Super Bowl win in 2012. I think Kyle Hamilton's going to turn out to be a pretty good player, and some guy named Ed Reed turned out well. So hey, they've done a great job of evaluating, and hopefully that can be a chess piece for this defense here in 2025. I like it, but we're not going to know, to be honest, right, until later this year.
Yep, still need offensive linemen, depth for sure, pass rushers, and kickers eventually going to have to be addressed as well. But getting back to the Orioles, this 3-for-28 runners in scoring position against the Nats. And I know the Nationals can throw out some pretty talented arms on a daily basis, but this run production or lack thereof has been a season-long dilemma. And a matter of fact, as we've discussed a thousand times with you and Nolan and our listeners, this goes back to the second half of 2024. And you know, they Adley, the Gunners, and Gunner and Westberg. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Mountcastle, but you know, what's the problemo here? And where's the patience and using all fields and this never say die sort of mentality? The Orioles were down 4-0, you know, a year ago. Mm-hmm. They're not out of it. Now they're down 4-0. It might as well be 14-0.
I mean, I mentioned it a little bit before, and we're going to get into some more clips about, you know, sound bites I had sitting down with guys that have been there and done that. You know, Brian Roberts, one guy who's been in the booth this past series, and then he's played, had a decorated career overall. Mark Teixeira, I know, a Baltimore guy, played for a long time with the Rangers, Yankees. The common theme, Bob? It's the mental side's going to take you to the next level. And I've seen players throughout my entire professional career. And when I grew up, you know, I grew up in a clubhouse, Bob. So I could tell you I've seen some of the most talented players not end up putting up the results that you would expect with the talent. That's what I look at with this Baltimore Orioles team. They have the talent to go out there and have one of the best offenses in baseball. But what's been holding them back in some cases? It's that mental side. I really do believe when Brandon Hyde says a tough time letting things go. Well, if you don't let it go, it snowballs. And what you've seen from last year to this year and some of these guys, there's a little bit of a stress. There's a little bit of a panic of, I want to do more, but how do I reset my mind? And a lot of the players right now, you can see it in their faces when they hit. There's frustration. They've seemed a little bit lost. And when you're at the plate, you got to have a clear mind. And that hasn't been the case so far for the Birds, you know, in 2025.
Are there too many voices? I mean, you've got assistant hitting coaches, then you've got the analytic, and then you've got all the film and the data that's at your disposal here. Is there too much going on where you're overthinking? And they're trying to tweak batting stances, and I don't know.
Well, overthinking. I don't want to jump down the hypotheticals of if they're working tweaking the mechanics and X, Y, and Z. Right? They probably are trying to find the feel. So we're trying to explain that out there to anyone. When you hit, when you talk about mechanics, it's really okay. You can say, "Hey, put your hands up here, drop your hands, get to your back leg," all the phrases. But the reality is, the hitter has to feel good. He has to feel whatever that sensation is. And once that clicks back in, Bob, then it's great. But the problem is when you're trying to find which way to go, you doubt yourself. And then you're thinking about, well, maybe I need to try something else. So for an example, you're in the box and we just talked about you need a clear head, right? Because, you know, Casey Mize is on the mound for the Tigers, Jack Flaherty, Scooble. And I'm going, okay, well, I got to see this ball come out of the hand. But imagine, Bob, for a second, while you're looking up at that pitcher and you go, you know what? Let me get my hands to the right spot. All right, oh, let me try to get back.
Tap my toe.
Yeah, but is your mind focused on just seeing the baseball? Is your mind focusing somewhere else because you don't feel confident, right? That little bit of taking it away messes with what you got to do in that moment. So I think it's a combination of overthinking and just trying to have a clear mind when you're at the dish.
Also, we're protecting the plate. Where you're down 0-2, you do everything. You throw the bat at the ball to stay alive. Where it's all about launch angles and exit velo and all of this. Has that changed approaches
yes.
here? Where if I don't hit the ball 100, if there, it seems as though that you know the more analytic driven, which I guess baseball is nowadays. You would know more than me. A 111 mile an hour screamer to the second baseman is more acceptable than an 80 mile an hour bloop that drives in. Guys from second and third to left field.
Did you have a chance?
Little Rod Carew action.
Did you have a chance to hear Terry Francona, manager of the Reds, soundbite the other day after Marte hit a big home run for them?
I did not.
So let me explain this context. Marte smashed this ball, I think, down against the Marlins. Smoked it, and Francona talked about, hey, he put a really good swing on it. I'm starting to see him put together some good at-bats, you know. It's really nice. And then the reporter asked, goes, you know, that was tied for the hardest hit ball of the season at 117 for a home run. And Terry looks at him, Tito looks at him, goes, okay. it was a good swing. I just care if it was a good swing. I don't care about how hard it was. If it had the result we needed, that's what I want. That's the example that we're talking about. I think we do get caught up with, hey, you got to hit a ball hard somewhere. That's the goal. But the next thing is get the job done. I don't care how you do it. Figure it out. And that is something that some of these guys need to focus more on, right? They in the minors too, the ABS system, they're being trained to, hey, take the balls that are balls, but say, hey, CB Buckner's behind the dish, very unpredictable. And you know he might call a pitch 6 inches off the plate. Personally, Bob, I'm swinging at that thing. But you've been programmed in the minor to take it. So there is a little bit of a change there that they're going to have to continue to address. So, and it is a mindset. It's the mindset of just not backing down. I'm going to figure out any means possible. And I still believe this. You put the ball in play, good things can happen. You don't put it in play, well, we're just never going to find out.
Ripping it with Ryan Ripken here. We got time for a call. Nolan, what do you make? Yeah, Nolan says yes. He gives us a thumbs up.
Whoa.
By the way, you know how much I hate hearing expected results? I spent $1 billion a week on the lottery. I'm expecting to win the Mega Millions. Still hasn't happened yet. Let's go to Harry in Middle River. Harry, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. I think this is the only way. I've been a season ticket holder, and I've been an Oriole fan since 1965. I watch every game if I'm not going to the game, and I DVR them all. So I see a lot of the stuff that's going on. I coach some baseball. My son actually was with Cal Ripken when Cal was at the stadium up in the Ironbirds, and he was assistant with him for a couple years when he was in the Sales University. Anyway, saying all that, to get out of this funk right now, the New York Yankees are coming in town. I hope one of the Yankees beans the Orioles. We need a big brawl coming out. The Don Buford days when he drugged a bat out to the mound, and they had a brawl. So I think that's the only way the Orioles will get out of this is they need something to get them out of this funk that they're in. I'll hang up and listen to what you guys got to say.
Oh, there's Harry.
Thank you for that.
Getting plonked and then going full on Armando Benitez, Alan Mills will get them out of the funk. I mean, the Yankees hit them, what, 9 times last year? They weren't brawling. Now, Hyde was ready to go to the dugout and start going kung fu
and
fighting.
And Freddie Gonzalez, bench coach last year.
Yeah, but is that really what it takes, a full-on brawl where you risk Gunner breaking his hand? Or he mentioned, you know, Cal, that brawl against Seattle back in 93 ended the streak.
That did almost end the streak.
And I think Messina got hurt in that melee, too.
He did. I mean, I think what I'm hearing is people want to see the Orioles play a little bit more ticked off. a little bit more sense of urgency in that regard. And whether that is, you know, you get, it says don't poke the bear, right? That's that phrase.
Right.
You know, maybe it's one thing if someone gets drilled, that kind of awakens the beast. I think that's the point. I think in general here for the Yankees, plunk, no plunk, whatever it is, the Orioles have owned the Yankees the last 2 years. So this is a great opportunity right now, despite all the issues, and New York's feeling, you know, fairly confident about who they are. If they come into Baltimore and they can't win the series against the O's, that should jolt the team. But you come in and play flat against New York, then we're back having the same conversation, and then one of your division rivals feels that they're going to be the big brother. So I think playing ticked off in the sense of urgency is the important thing here.
We're ripping it with Ryan Ripken, Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw. Here it is, Featured Artist Friday. It is The Clash. We'll come back, talk about the Tigers, who are quietly kind of winning their division, and they have a great starting rotation, and the Orioles are going to see that up close and personal. What's it, Jason Beck? From MLB.com talks about Detroit next here on The Fan. Tigers turned some of that losing into draft capital, which is now coming to fruition. And let's go out to the phones, talk about right now, half game up in the Central. He's with MLB.com. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome into the show for the first time, Jason Beck. Jason, welcome to the show. You're with Bob Haney and Ryan Ripken. How are you feeling on this Friday?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. Great. Now, here in Baltimore, we lament the Orioles right now kind of bringing up the rear in the American League East. And, you know, they've were bad for a while and turned it into Gunner and Adley and Westberg and Kowser and all of these dudes. But didn't really invest, Mike Elias has it anyway, in pitching. Well, you look at the Tigers, and I know Skubal was a later round draft pick as he had some arm woes coming out of high school. But they did with Job and certainly with Mize, who's going tonight, and they did invest capital in some of their position players too. But what about the risk versus reward when it comes to drafting arms, whether it's high school, collegiate, and, you know, with this Max Eppert stuff, the eventual, it seems, Tommy John stuff?
A lot of the, you know, the pitching picks came out of the previous administration, you know, when Al Avila was GM. You know, they looked at the ballpark. They looked at, you know, how this team plays and what the strengths of this team in this park would be, and felt like the way to build a contender here was going to be through dominant starting pitching. And so, you know, it started really well before Casey Mize. You know, they used their number 9 overall pick in 2016 on Matt Manning, went to Alex Faedo with their top pick a year later. And then, you know, Job was an interesting pick because, you know, in 2021, you know, there were, that was that crop of really good high school shortstops. And a lot of people thought the Tigers would be on Marcelo Meyer. And, you know, they kind of threw a curveball, so to speak, and went with Job. And, you know, they took some criticism for that for a few years. And then when Job got healthy, first of all, but also, you know, honed his pitches, got in the lab and really kind of turned it on a couple years ago, it really kind of flipped the narrative to where, oh, wow, okay, this guy looks like he could be not only a major league starter, but a really good one. And so you're kind of seeing that all come to fruition. Now, they did draft positionally, and they hit on some pretty good guys with, you know, with Riley Green in 2019 and Torque being the first overall pick in 2020. But by and large, you know, this started with the, you know, with the pitching.
Yeah, it always starts with starting pitching. That sets the tone. But we just, like you just said, there is this different waves of variabilities of what can happen with starting rotations and pitching with the injuries. But one thing that continues to go with every team is kind of setting a standard, setting a culture. And I'm curious from your opinion now, because A.J. Hinch now in the Tigers, this team looks like a contending team. They look like a team that can not just win the Central, but they believe they can be a serious threat in the American League. Can you just talk about the evolution that has happened there and what you think has been the biggest difference for this Tigers team kind of setting their own precedent for what they expect to be the next few years?
Well, you know, I think it starts with, first, it helps that a large amount of this team came up through the system together. You know, this wasn't really a collaboration of a bunch of free agents. And so these guys have known each other in a lot of cases for several years. And I think this is a team in which players are invested in each other. And so when you have a team that, you know, platoons and mixes and matches as much as this team does, you know, it helps that guys buy into it because they buy into, you know, the common good and in serving their teammates right. You know, it's not something that happens a ton, but, you know, it's something where, you know, it's easier to get, you know, guys like Kerry Carpenter on board with not starting every day and sitting against some lefties when he knows the guy who's going to be filling in for him. You know, it helps when, you know, guys are really, you know, running the bases aggressively, going first to third to set up a better RBI situation for the guy after him, knowing, you know, who that guy is. So, you know, there's a good chemistry here. And I think part of that, and you guys probably see it too, I would imagine, is the organic nature of the way this team was largely assembled.
For sure. And for AJ Hinch, I was just even reading some articles from some of his former players. You know, George Springer was saying, I don't know what it is, but he finds a way to get guys to buy in to make you want to run through a wall for him, you know, and then add that into guys that play together. It's a recipe for success. You know, out of curiosity then, when we're talking about patience, and you mentioned Torque a second ago, Spencer Torkelson, who got off to a, you know, people were wondering what his place was going to be on the team. How have you seen him and some of the younger position players handle the adversity? Because that is something that Baltimore is currently dealing with some of their young stars.
Well, it wasn't easy. And, you know, there were some pretty low times last season. I think Torque would admit that. You know, talking with him, and even after he got called up late in the year, you know, he didn't exactly, you know, look like a guy on the verge of a rebound. You know, there was kind of scuffling down the stretch. This team kind of produced offense a lot of times in spite of him rather than because of him. And then, you know, the Tigers emphasized that they wanted to see some adjustments at the plate from him. It really hadn't seen it much last year. And so he went into the off season and, you know, made some subtle tweaks, you know, tweaked his mechanics a little bit to be a little bit more athletic, narrowed his stance at the plate, moved a little bit further back in the box, and really looked more, he's looked more able to react to the pitches and not just sell out on one particular pitch. He's gone up with a better game plan as far as like knowing how opponents like to approach him. You know, you kind of see, you know, a better overall version of him, and it really took off early. You know, he wasn't guaranteed a job out of spring training. I think a lot of people would have looked and said, you know, he's more likely to go back to AAA Toledo or go to another organization to trade than he was likely to you know, break camp with Detroit. But he hit his way on. And the way he hit in spring training, you know, he got his way into an everyday role now to where he's not only playing and in the majors, he's really the focal point of his offense right now. You know, with Riley Green scuffling, you know, Torque is really the guy that you look at and say, you know, opponents look at this guy and say, you know, we don't want him to beat us. And that says a lot compared to where he was at this point a year ago.
Jason Beck covers the Tigers and Major League Baseball, obviously, for MLB.com. Orioles-Tigers start a three-game series tonight in Detroit. Jason, appreciate the time. Enjoy the set this weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road, hopefully.
Should be a fun series. Thanks, guys.
All right, Jason Beck. Orioles take it on the Tigers. We'll talk more about that in the 1 o'clock hour. Come back, however, hopefully count a little dough heading into the weekend with buy or sell. Steve Molesky be joining us at 1:30, Ryan. Talk about what's going on down on the farm and here at the major league level. On-base percentage is bad. Slugging percentage is even worse. Orioles last place in the East. Hey, but they won last night. It's all that matters, right?
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Benny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
We're ripping it with Ryan as we do every Friday here on 105.7 The Fan. Bob Hating, Ryan Ripken. Nolan McGraw's on the other side of the glass heading into a weekend. Last weekend of April, believe it or not. Oh, my God. Next Saturday is the Kentucky Derby.
Is it really?
Yeah. Let that sink in. But anyway, money always makes the world go round, doesn't it? It certainly makes you feel better. Let's see if we have any by ourselves.
All right. Well, the market is open today. I can confidently say that, unlike last week. S&P 500 is up 1879. Dow Jones, though, down about 115. DraftKings down 64 cents. And Under Armour also down, but only 11 cents.
Oh, is that all? What's it now in the negatives per share?
$5.69.
Let's get it together, UA.
Are you still holding over there?
No, I'm holding.
No.
And there's one thing I'm holding right now, and
it ain't
a lot of money from Under Armour.
All right, let's see. Our first topic of the day here is about the Orioles. Charlie Morton, scheduled to start tomorrow against Detroit. There was some hope that Kyle Gibson would be ready to take that spot, but we have to wait a little bit longer for him. Earlier this week, though, Brandon Hyde was asked about possibly moving Charlie Morton to the bullpen at some point. He said all options are on the table. Obviously, they'd like to get something out of their $15 million investment, but his starts, they're just killing the team right now. Ryan, buy or sell, Morton's current pitch mix with no reliable curveball would make him a little more ideal for a bullpen role.
I'd sell at this point. I think that he's been doing it for so long, I think you leave him in one spot or that's it. You know, he's been a starter for how many years now, his big league career overall? And I did a breakdown on this, Nolan and Bob, last week, actually, after that bad. Actually, it was earlier this week after the bad outing against the Reds. The crazy thing to me is his fastball was giving hitters fits. Yeah, Elly De La Cruz hit that home run on a 1-2 pitch. But you know how many counts I saw 2-0, 3-1 hitters counts where they're going, hey, you got to come to me? And they were late on his fastball. And it wasn't that it was located well. But the thing that happened, you mentioned it, Nolan, he was so engrossed with the curveball. That's been his pitch. So I just don't think it's necessarily the right fit for him to go to the pen. I think for Charlie, it's either he's got to figure it out here and get another start, which he needs to. The Orioles don't have the depth. Or then they're just going to have to move on in a different direction.
Well, going back to the curveball, I mean, I kind of had a layman's take on it a couple weeks ago, just saying, hey, can we abandon it altogether? I mean, it's not like you're a two-pitch pitcher. Where like someone like Felix Bautista, if he doesn't have a feel for the splitter, well, he's just rolling with the heater at that point. I mean, is it as simple as saying, hey, don't throw it?
I think you have to see if you have it that day. But last time, what drove me nuts was the first inning, by the way, Elly De La Cruz had 9 pitches on the day for Charlie Morton facing Elly. 1-2 count. And you throw one curveball, it's early, you want to see if you have it. Now it's 2-2, no one on base. And you throw 2 more curveballs, you triple up on a pitch you don't have control over, and then you walk one of the fastest dudes on the planet, and you throw 15 more pitches in the process. That's where I get at it with Charlie. And here's the crazy thing, and you're right, don't abandon it if you don't have it in the first inning. The phrase I like, Nolan, is you got to pitch with what you have that day. You know what's nuts to me, Bob? Charlie Morton, hitters are hitting 143 off of his fastball. Everything else is north of 385, but that four-seamer, 143. So clearly, that fastball still has some juice, but he's going to have to try to make better pitch selections here in his next outing against Detroit.
Over to the NFL, Christian McCaffrey says he's fully recovered from that injury that plagued his 2024 season. Now, he's no stranger to recovering from major injuries. Remember, he had over 2,000 yards from scrimmage back in 2019, only to play an incomplete season the next year. People questioned if he would ever be able to regain his form. Well, he did, both in 2022 and 2023. However, things won't be any easier this time around as he's approaching 30 years old. Buy or sell, Bob, McCaffrey still has another monster season in him, on par with those 19, 22, and 23 years.
Yeah, I'll buy it. A monster season. in him. And if health permits, it could be this year as San Francisco looks to make amends for a disastrous 2024. But Christian McCaffrey, I mean, as you can see, he works out hard, keeps himself in great shape. The bloodlines from athletes remembers dad Ed, and that his uncle Billy played for Duke and Vanderbilt, college basketball star. So he's got one monster season left in him. Better be this year, though, if you're San Francisco. Because old Brock Purdy's looking for a big payday.
We'll go back to baseball here, where the Cardinals, we know they tried to trade Nolan Arenado during the offseason. He was even willing to waive his no-trade clause for the right situation, but nothing ever came about. In a recent interview, he even admits that if more losing is on the horizon for St. Louis, this will likely lead to more of a youth push by the front office, and a trade could be back on the table. He's off to a decent start this year, at least compared to his dip in production last summer. Buy or sell, Ryan, the Cardinals will look to trade Arenado even if they're competitive in late July.
Define competitive, right?
Is it within kind of within that wild card striking distance?
If they're in that striking distance, but they're not in position, I think that they move them. So would that be the buy, right? Yeah, we'd buy
it's
in
a
it.
Buy.
Yeah, I. Nolan Arenado is at a point right now, 34 years old. He still can play the position, still can play third base. OPS right now is at 800. He's only got two jacks on the season, but a guy going to a different team where you get more life, it just seems like to me St. Louis is going to have a chance to get value from a desperate team that needs offense at that break. And you saw it last year with Detroit where they go, you know what? If we make a run, so be it, but we're still going to get something for Flaherty because the value's there. I think someone's going to pay enough to get Nolan Arenado. I think he's going to play solid, and then he's going to go somewhere and help a team make a run. So I don't think he's going to be a Cardinal when it's all said and done.
And our last topic today comes from the NBA, where the Warriors and the Rockets, their series resumes tomorrow. Everyone waiting to see what's going to happen with Jimmy Butler. Good news is no fracture after he took that hard fall the other night, but still being described as a deep glute muscle contusion.
What?
A very bruised butt is the translation there.
He's literally butthurt.
That's good. Yeah. It's going to restrict his movement, I guess, is the main point here. Now, we saw what happened after he left the other night. Rockets go on to win, even up the series, leaving Curry as a one-man army. Currently averaging 25 points between their two games so far. But Bob, buy or sell, Curry will need to score 30 to 35 a night without Butler for Golden State to even have a shot.
Ah, man. Because Braden, I can't pronounce his last name, he's kind of a stat filler, but he doesn't put up Jimmy Buckets level points.
Mm-mm.
I mean, where's that offense coming from? And it seemed to me, by the way, not to blame Draymond Green, that he shoved Thompson and he kind of, you know, flipped. I don't think it was a dirty play on either part. But yeah, I'll buy that. Steph Curry's going to have to go back like he was in game one, where he just throwing up all kinds of crazy nonsense.
So he gets undercut Butler the other night. Ja Morant gets undercut last night. Hey, what's going on here? I mean,
yeah, and that's kind of like a no-no in basketball.
It's like the unwritten thing.
Like, there's players. You're going to the hoop and there's like hard fouls. That's one thing. But to flip them, yeah, you definitely, because all sorts of crazy, usually bad things happen
there. No doubt. No doubt.
Literally butthurt. Jimmy Buckets. Got to do his thing. We'll come back. We're going to hear from Mark DeRosa, the Oriole lineup. With 24 games, am I right? It's 23 different lineups, or certainly in the high 20s for Brandon Hyde this year. So Mark DeRosa, coach of the national team here in the World Baseball Classic, will explain why that's usually a bad thing. And Brian Roberts will talk about slumps and, you know, how do you get out of them? Because they tend to last for a long time. Remember baseball, and I'm going real like, duh. Best hitters get hits 3 out of 10 times.
About that.
If you're completing 30% of your passes, you suck as a quarterback. You're cut as a kicker. You're a terrible shooter in the NBA. You do that in baseball, you get a plaque in Cooperstown.